Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 67 of the Spurs Up Show, the best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. We've got a packed show today. We're talking about the Gamecocks 27-24 homecoming win, comeback victory over the Tennessee Volunteers. We're also going to preview the Gamecocks game against Ole Miss. And the voice of the Gamecocks, a man whose voice is as smooth as silk, who does a fantastic job with the basketball and the baseball programs calling their games, Derek Scott joins the show for a quick interview on another packed episode of the Spurs.
Are you working? What kind of work do you do? What is it you want to do when you grow up?
All right, I'm Chris Phillips. He's Thomas Floyd. Tom, great to have you back on again. How was your homecoming weekend? Obviously, it was Halloween weekend as well. We're recording this on Halloween Eve, so things might get a little spooky on the podcast tonight. But, Tom, how was your weekend overall?
It was pretty good. You know, Gamecocks win, Patriots win. Can't ask for a better weekend. Other than my midshipmen getting beat by Notre Dame like ragdolls, other than that, it was a pretty good weekend. Can't complain.
You a Navy guy now?
I used to play with Navy on NCAA football under the triple option. Now people's throats all the time. So, like, I like low-key, I'm a fan of Navy.
All right. Well, hey, there you go. I did not know that. Before we get too deep
into triple option,
got you. No, trust me. I remember running on those games. I still play NCAA 14. So, before we get too deep in the show, my weekend, Tom, absolutely fantastic weekend. Had an absolute blast. Got into Columbia Friday, and one of the most fun weekends I've had in Columbia in quite some time. Game day on Saturday was absolutely epic. Met up with so many cool people that, you know, follow along with us, support us, people that are friends of our show that we interact with. So I just want to say, you know, appreciate everyone that met on Saturday, and I want to give a special shout out. Forgive me for – I might clear my throat a couple times, and I'm kind of battling. I think I'm getting the cold. But I want to give a quick special shout-out to the Everharts that were sitting in front of me at the game on Saturday night. I will admit, Tom, I got a little lit on Saturday. I kind of warned everyone on Twitter that I was going to take advantage of homecoming, and I got a little lit. I had a good time. Wasn't too bad, but I was doing a lot of yelling, a lot of singing of Cocky Top when South Carolina secured the victory when DJ Wanham got the final sack. But anyways, I was wearing my Spurs Up Show shirt to the game on Saturday, and it was so funny because I'm sitting there, and I had a buddy of mine sitting next to me, and we're kind of having casual conversation over the game, and, you know, we're going through, and I've probably been sitting there for about a whole quarter, and we start having conversation with people in front of us, and they're like, man, like, you should really have your own talk show. And I was like, okay, well, this is funny because I have a Spurs Up Show sticker in my pocket and I'm wearing the t-shirt, and I wound up giving them stickers, and they were like, yeah, if you give us a shout out, we'll leave you a 5-star review. I think that's how the conversation went, at least how I recall it. So if it didn't, I apologize. But long story short, I told them I'd give them a shout out. They gave us a 5-star review on iTunes. So really, really do appreciate it. Again, it was a fantastic weekend. Even better, obviously, when South Carolina wins. That's really kind of – it all encompasses around that. So, want to dive right into the game, Tom. You know, South Carolina, again, gets the 27-24 win. Maybe a little bit closer than we all thought, but at this point, I think we should just all be expecting these Tennessee-South Carolina games to be hard-fought and close games because it seems like every one of them are. Overall, Tom, talk about just your initial reactions to the game from, like, a 30,000-point view.
Well, I actually was at home this weekend. Had to go home for a couple of different reasons, but so I couldn't watch the game in person. But I was watching it on TV, and it was obviously not. I wish they would have beat Tennessee by 40 because I hate Tennessee. But I mean, it just seems like you said, that every year that's a close game between South Carolina and Tennessee, and that this year too. I mean, Tennessee got out to a lead early. I think it was like 21-9. I could be wrong on that, but pretty positive it was 21-9. Jake Bentley had this slow start in the first half, you know, had that pick early. I won't really say entirely his fault, but I think if he'd have thrown it in the pass, would have not got tipped. Could have gotten picked off, but just the slow starts are still hurting us because I feel like if you don't get that slow start in the first half, you probably could beat Tennessee like 40-something, 24, which, I mean, they really could have done that. I think Tennessee had a really good game plan coming in and getting the ball in the perimeter and letting their players make plays, not asking too much out of Garantano. And I think, you know, South Carolina had a good plan to it, just, you know, absolutely running the ball and sticking with it. Rico Dowdle went off this game. I think you saw probably the best version of him since the Coastal Carolina game. And there are a lot of different pieces that, you know, I could be happy about from this game, but just at the end of the day, a win is a win, and that's what we got.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. It's crazy how this team continues to kind of fumble out of the gate and start so slow. Score, like you said, 14-9 at halftime. Tennessee comes out the second half, marches right down the field. And Tom, it's like you said, this was one of those games for me. It was sort of weird because, you know, obviously during the game I wasn't pleased with the play, but I don't know if it's, you know, I'm going to be dating myself here when I say this, but, you know, I was 14 years old in 2005 when South Carolina got their first win over Tennessee in Knoxville. So I remember it very, very vividly, and I remember what it felt like to never be able to beat Tennessee. So my immediate emotions after the game was just pure joy, because I feel like anytime, from a program perspective, anytime South Carolina beats Tennessee in football, it's a great feeling, it's a great thing. But a little bit after the game, as I got back to my buddy's place, and you know, it started to set in, my buddy asked me, he's like, "What'd you think of that game?" I'm like, I just kind of thought, I was like, you know, I'm really happy we got the win, but I'm just not ecstatic with the way we played, because I don't think Tennessee's all that good. You know, I was really impressed with a couple of things. We'll start on offense. You know, Jake Bentley, just as much criticism as I've heaped on him, the guts that he showed in the second half to bring this team back, to lead these guys, I thought he was a little bit more under control with his emotions on Saturday night. You know, he played a fantastic game. I think he played the kind of game, and I was going to get into this a little bit later, I think he played the kind of game that South Carolina needs to have the game plan for him going forward, which he only threw 16 passes, completed 11 of them. I just think it was a manageable workload for him. You know, talk about, Tom, what did you see out of Jake Bentley on Saturday night? Any improvements that you saw at all? Because honestly, again, I just really thought that, you know, one of the biggest things, obviously the running game got going, which we're going to talk about in a second, but I just really thought the game plan for Jake Bentley going into that game Saturday night was so much better than it has been all season.
Well, I agree. I think that for Bentley to be successful, the South Carolina has to run the ball effectively. They rushed for 224 against Tennessee, and obviously that's a big help to any quarterback when your team can rush for more than 200 yards. But Rico having a game like he did, Mon Denson having a couple of big runs, and Jake obviously helping on the ground too, is going to hit. If he can run the ball, then that's going to make defense respect that and play more off ball. But I think he played a lot better second half than he did first half, which has kind of been the trend with him. I think that a lot of people picked on that he is going to have a slow first half. Once he settles down and gets going, then he'll be fine for the rest of games. I mean, really, that pick early, I don't really want to consider that his fault. And it was just, you know, plays like that can happen sometimes, and there's nothing you can do to control it. So, I mean, I think he played overall a better game. That was probably his best overall game. I would say overall, considering how bad he played against Texas A&M in the first half, since probably like the Vanderbilt game. But like, as far as a second half, a greatness, he hasn't had his greatest second half so far, I think, was against A&M. But overall against Tennessee, I think he did what the coaches asked out of him. That's really all that we can expect at this point.
Yeah, and absolutely, like you mentioned, the run game obviously was a huge factor for him. 224 rushing yards for the Gamecocks, all led by Rico Dowdle. I mean, what a welcome sight to have Rico Dowdle back, breaking tackles, making guys miss. That's something Will Muschamp talked about in his presser today, and really just after the game on Saturday, was that, you know, they hadn't made enough guys miss, especially in league play. And I just thought Rico Dowdle really returned to his old self. I mean, Tyson Williams gets the start on Saturday night. I don't know if that fired him up or renewed his focus or what it did, but, I mean, Rico Dowdle just looked like a different guy. 14 carries, 140 yards overall in the night. Again, he had a fantastic game. He ran with that tenacity and that hard-nosed running we saw in the Coastal Carolina game. And you know, you could say Vanderbilt as well. But, Tom, talk about what you saw from Rico Dowdle. I mean, again, personally for me, the offensive line play continues to be really good. But Rico Dowdle was the biggest difference maker to me on Saturday night.
I agree. I think that obviously that and the offensive line made a big difference. And you can see that Brian McClendon had the game plan of, we want to run the ball regardless of who's in, but they wanted to pound the ball. And when Rico got in, it seemed like he was hitting a run like every time and getting five or six at least on the clip. And obviously he averaged 10 yards a carry. But that, I mean, you weren't exactly getting 10 every time. But it just seems like every run he made a guy miss, or just it was just one guy making that one guy miss and getting that extra 3 or 4 yards to make it second and five or third and two and manageable, and not putting Jake in third and 10 and third and nine and stuff like that. But overall, I think that, you know, Rico did a really good job, something that we haven't, like you said, seen since Coastal Carolina game. Tyson didn't have the greatest game on the ground, and maybe that's because he got the start, and maybe it's just a mental thing with them. But Mon did a good job, and, you know, I think that overall the running game was really effective.
Yeah, I like the way they platoon the running back Saturday night. I like that a lot. You know, I've been critical of Bobby Bentley, especially at times, for the way they use these guys. But I think overall the game plan they had on Saturday night really worked. It worked very well. I mean, anytime you run over 200 yards, it's easy to say that. Bounce back game for the wide receivers. I mean, I know Shy had a big drop, but, I mean, one thing I was just so happy about because, you know, with wide receivers, it's such a mental game, you know, where – you know, one drop can lead to another. It's you know, I always equate it to the baseball equation where when you don't want the ball to hit you, it's going to find you, and it just starts to eat at you mentally. But Bryan Edwards with the huge catch, I think the 73-yard reception he had, you know, Tom, it was just great, I think, just to see him make that catch, reconfirm, you know, okay, he's gotten over it. He's back to being his old self. He's back to being Bryan Edwards. Deebo Samuel, only 3 catches for 8 yards on the night, but has a phenomenal one-handed catch. You know, just talk about what you saw from the wide receivers unit, because to me, again, it was just very nice to see. You didn't see nearly the amount of drops you saw. Again, there weren't as many passes, but you didn't see nearly the amount of drops you saw against Texas A&M. That was something we were really worried about coming this game.
I mean, no, I think that they did a really good job of especially using the tight end, because KC Crosby and Keel Pollard only had one reception, but both of KC had one for 15 and Keel had one for 10. That's what you need out of those guys. And Jacob August is another guy. I think he was out this game, but just another guy that you need to get back and use your tight ends, because, you know, at least against Missouri, you have Kyle Markway just running down the middle wide open because we hadn't gone to our tight ends all game. Maybe that's something they can use more in the future in the receiving game. But, I mean, Brian, that catch was – that's something that you see – I mean, it's just an amazing catch out of him. Jake put the ball right on him, open throw.
Yeah, great throw.
And he had somebody open backside. I can't remember who it was, but he had him open on the numbers on the right side of the field because we were driving towards the student section end zone. South end zone. Is that south or north? I can't remember. Driving towards whatever end zone that is. You know, bang, bang play. Jake makes a great throw on a double move by Brian. I mean, just something that was a great catch. He almost broke it for a touchdown, but obviously once you're running for 70 yards, you're probably a little bit tired. He got ran down, caught it like the two. But, you know, Deebo, too, with that great one-handed catch. You know, plays like that give you confidence and give the receivers confidence in themselves. Hey, we can go do this. And another guy that, you know, just one reception for 7 yards, but Josh Van finally, you know, seemed like hasn't ever been used in a receiving game, like, or he hasn't been gone to. Jake hits him, he makes the guy miss, and almost gets the first down for us. Something I didn't expect out of him. I expect him to just go down on one tackle, but – overall, from the core, it was a really good game. Shy having the one drop, I mean, maybe it's a confidence thing there, but he did get DPI on that. So, I mean, I don't really blame a drop on him, but considering he had pass interference, if he wouldn't got his arm dragged down, he probably would have made the catch.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I mean, I was just going to say again, I mean, that reception by Bryan Edwards, that was a fantastic throw. I mean, there's no doubt that was a fantastic throw. One of the best throws probably Jake Bentley's had all season. And, you know, I was going to save it more so for my takeaways from the game, and I'll still kind of reiterate it when we get there. But one of my biggest takeaways, Tom, was, you know what, with the whole Jake Bentley situation, we've all had our opinions all season long. And I still will, and I still do. And if Jake Bentley goes out there and, honestly, if he stinks it up against Ole Miss, there's going to be people that – bitch and moan, and I'm going to probably be one of them. But I can at least say that I can see what the coaching staff sees in Jake Bentley and why they think he's the best option, simply because he is a guy that what he lacks in just overall talent and decision-making and maybe his emotional instability, he makes up for in the simple fact that he would give life and limb to get a win for South Carolina. And that is at least one thing that's something that I can really, really respect. I will say that Jake Bentley did that on Saturday night. You know, the diving for the 2-point conversion. Just, again, the way he just played and commanded the offense in the second half. You know, I want to give a big kudos to Jake Bentley for what he did. I mean, he really, really played well, and you just have to hope that he can – again, I love the game plan they had for him. I just don't think they asked him to do too much. I don't put the interception in the first half on him, that tip ball. But, you know, I love the game plan they had for him. I hope they can continue to do that, because I think he's a quarterback that if you – use him in the right way and don't ask things of him that you should not, which it's all going to be dependent on can South Carolina run the football. I mean, if they can't run the ball, we really don't – you know, South Carolina doesn't have much of a choice. But I think if you can continue to run the ball and you're going up against a defense this weekend, which we're going to get to in a bit, that is porous – I mean, let's call it for what it is. I think if you can continue to do that, Jake Bentley can continue to give you good football and give you good minutes. Another huge return – or one of a big return for this weekend, Tom, was on the defensive side of the ball, and DJ Wonnum. Dude absolutely goes off. Before we get to that, because I'm talking about DJ Wonnum, I want to mention the offensive line on the offensive side. and Dylan won him, what he did. The South Carolina offensive line with a really, really good game. Obviously, you run for over 200. It's a great game. But Dylan Wonnum, SEC Freshman of the Week. DJ Wonnum wins SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week. First pair of brothers ever to do so. And I got to say, if you're a Gamecock fan, you've got to be really, really excited about the progression of Dylan Wonnum. Because, you know, I remember, Tom, that was a recruiting battle that kind of, you know, it went down to the wire, per se. I mean, that wasn't one that it was a slam dunk. You know what I mean? Gamecock fans were sort of waiting and waiting and waiting. And I tell you what, he has made way more of an impact than I ever expected and got the start on Saturday night as a true freshman in the SEC. I mean, that is a – you know, that's a big time deal in my opinion. So I'm not sure, because obviously you're the offensive line guru. Talk about what you saw from the offensive line as a whole, and then obviously from Dylan Wonnum, what he's been able to do as such a young guy.
I mean, obviously I think they played really well. On the night, Tennessee as a defense had one sack and four tackles for loss, which, I mean, tackles for loss happen, and they can be running around line of scrimmage. It's not really anything the offensive line can do in particular. But, I mean, Dylan obviously had a really good game, won SEC Freshman of the Week. I think he graded out around like an 80%, which for a freshman lineman in the SEC is practically amazing. But, I mean, I think they've done a good job protecting Bentley all year, and I think that something Muschamp has said, and I think in the press conferences a lot, is that it's not anything that Blake's done to get his – Blake Camper, the guy who started right tackle, or the player started right tackle all year so far, except for the game against Tennessee, is that he hasn't done anything to lose the position. Dylan has just done things to, like, get the start. You know, when you're a younger guy and Blake's a senior, and, you know, it kind of sucks for him. But if Dylan's going to be that guy in the future and they know he's a better player, then he has to get played. It doesn't matter how old you are. But anyway, I mean, obviously if Dylan's starting over a senior, has been in the program for 5 years now, you have to think, hey, this guy's got to be pretty good. He's probably going to end up being a guy that's going to be there for 3 years. He leaves a junior, get drafted first day or two, I would say early day two, if not late day one, just considering, you know, you don't see a lot of offensive linemen in the SEC in specific starting as a freshman, because your body size is different. You have to gain a bunch of weight, get a bunch of muscle. But obviously a guy like Dylan, he just has that stuff already. If you saw it in DJ his freshman year, those guys are just bred at a different level. It comes from Tucker High School. You know, Muschamp always raves about Tucker. Got Josh Van and I think Aaron Sterling and DJ didn't go to Tucker, but Dylan went to Tucker High School. Talks about their effort and toughness, and that's what Muschamp wants. So if he's getting that out of Dylan and the rest of the offensive line, then I don't think any of us can complain. But one specific thing I want to hit on is that jet sweep we called after Brian Edwards' huge reception. Not jet sweep. It was just a regular sweep play out of I formation. Zach Bailey pulls, just absolutely obliterates a linebacker. It was just one of the sweetest pull blocks I've ever seen in my life. But just it's great to see it out of them, because last year I think they were, you know, kind of bad at times, and we're going to see next week what Malik Young can do replacing Dennis Daly, which I don't think – I'm confident that he can do it, but after seeing, you know, after watching him last year and specifically keying on him, I don't think he's the best option at six man. But if it's just for a game, I think we'll be all right, considering how bad – not how bad Ole Miss's defense is, but how not as good as they are as the rest of the defense in the SEC. So I think we'll be all right for missing Dennis Daly for one game, but – offense line as a whole has just done a great job this year.
Yeah, if you want to get Tom going, just talk some O-line. You want to get Tom, get him going a little bit, get the yapper going, just talk some O-line.
The O-line's, like, so fun to talk about, because I just love guys seeing him get, like, absolute mauled and pancake. Like, whenever I see guys just getting folded, or, like, even when I'm watching D-line and I watch Javon Kinlaw just – like press a guy back 5 yards down in the backfield, I'm just like, how is he that strong and that big to do that? Like, it just doesn't make sense. But I don't know. That's another story for a different day.
Yeah, I think one of the fun things about talking O-line too is I feel like I could make stuff up to people and they'd have no idea what I'm talking about. Because I watch every game and hardly know what I'm talking about with the O-line.
Well, I saw this quote that was like, I can't remember who it was, but it was on PFT or Big Cat retweet. It was some offensive line coach from some school. I can't remember where it was. It was some big, like, I think it was in the Big Ten. He was talking about how offensive linemen are the only players in football that don't have statistics. Like, we gave them pancakes, but that nobody cares about those. They don't record them because they're the most selfish players. You know, he's like, I wish all my kids were offensive linemen or something. He said something. It was a football guy thing to say, but I don't know. I totally agree. If you want to raise your son the right way, raise him as an offensive lineman.
I did see that, and you know what? Shout out to the Gamecocks offensive line, because like you said, they've done work. I think not having, you know, not having the injury bug hit, knock on wood, has been big. I mean, obviously with Malik Young having to fill in for Dennis Daly. But, yeah, those guys have done work this season for sure. Getting back to the defensive side of the ball, we talked about Dylan Wonnum. Let's talk about DJ Wonnum. His presence felt in a big way. Didn't exactly blow up the stat sheet. I mean, three tackles, but he had two sacks, two tackles for loss, and closed out the game, which was – it was eerily similar to the way Jadeveon Clowney closed out the South Carolina-Tennessee game in 2012 with a blindside hit of the quarterback. Talk about, Tom, what you saw from DJ Wonnum, and, man, it was a sight for sore eyes to see him back on that defense.
Well, I mean, obviously I don't think Tennessee ran at him a bunch considering how little his stats were. And I agree. I wouldn't run at the guy. He's a freak of nature. I don't understand why I think anyone who goes back and watches that Coastal Carolina tape realizes, hey, maybe we should not run DJ Wonnum and let our running backs get murdered in the backfield. But I think he played really well. I think that RJ Roderick, a guy that, you know, obviously you didn't mention him, but another a freshman that's coming along really well, Kingsley Inogbury, I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah.
Kingsley had a great game. I saw him get in the backfield multiple times and, you know, almost be at that tackle and then just miss it by hair too. But I think there were a lot of positives off the defense. Obviously, giving up 24 points and letting Tennessee and missing some tackles in places and maybe not attacking the ball like they should are things they have to improve on to beat Ole Miss. But overall, I thought they played, you know, they obviously played good enough to win, but they made the key stops when they needed to.
Absolutely. So I got to ask you a question, Tom. What's up with your boy, Steven Montak? You called him the most underrated player before the season. He's had a kind of rough go at it. I don't mean to single him out, but I didn't think he had a great game on Saturday. You know, RJ Roderick's basically taking his spot right now, I feel like, getting a ton of playing time. And overall, the secondary obviously continues to be, you know, that's going to be the weak link for the South Carolina defense right now moving on him. You got J.C. Horn, Rashad Fenton, still a good option, but there's a lot of other uncertainty surrounding that Gamecocks secondary. What'd you see from the Gamecocks secondary, Tom? Like I said, what's up with your boy Steven Montak?
Well, I mean, Montak in general, I think after getting dragged for 80 yards by Jay Sternberger, I think my confidence would just be absolutely murdered. Maybe he just needs to make a big play to get it back or something. I don't know. But, as the secondary as a whole, I mean, they were committed to not letting Tennessee beat them on the deep ball. None of Tennessee's receivers had a reception longer than 20 yards. But when you let them 5 and 6 you can get a first down, it kind of eliminates the point of playing 8 yards off the ball every time. And you saw with all of their receivers, and they played too deep, and they made Tennessee drive down the field. And Tennessee did a decent job of driving down the field. And you know, obviously there were some key stops South Carolina had. You know, you force that field goal instead of letting them get a touchdown. That's, you know, Tennessee might end up winning instead of losing. But overall, I thought the secondary played as good as they could to be playing so safe, I would say, and not really attacking the ball. Yeah, I would say they played really conservative, and that was the game plan going in. So they accomplished what they were trying to do, but when you get first down and then get, you know, I think Tennessee had 38 minutes of time of possession. A lot of that probably came from just them dinking and dunking their way down the field so much. But I wish the secondary in general would have played a little more closer to the actual receiver instead of playing 8 yards on the ball. But other than that, I really don't have a complaint on the secondary.
Yeah, I was surprised at that too, just because, you know, I know Tennessee's got some big body wide receivers, but I mean, Jarrett Garantano is not exactly the most polished or proven passer in the league. And I mean, to give him that much, I guess, give him that easy of throws where he can get his confidence. I mean, he made some plays on Saturday night. I was extremely impressed with the way Jarrett Garantano looked. I mean, I talked about him last week, just saying that I thought he was a really, really good option for them and that he, you know, he's a really underrated player. I mean, he looked a lot better than I even expected. One of the big things, Tom, I was curious to get your take on this. South Carolina has been very, very good this year on third down defense, not so much on Saturday night. South Carolina gives up 11 of 16 on third downs. Meanwhile, they go 4 of 9 on third downs. Is it something you think we should, or Gamecock fans should be concerned about moving forward? I'll go ahead and just say, I don't think it's something you should be totally, totally concerned about, just because, like you said, it felt like South Carolina was playing almost a little bit conservative on the defensive side, especially with the coverage they were giving up. But it's just something that I feel like just can't happen. I mean, 11 for 16, that's a pretty brutal night on the money down.
I mean, if you look at it, I think that South Carolina hit Jarrett Garantano on third down, it seemed like every time, or getting in his face, and he was just making the throws. And they were singling the weak man out on the play, whoever it was, whoever they thought they had a good matchup, and they were doing a lot of underneath routes, you know, catching it right at the line of scrimmage and busting it upfield for two or three more yards. Like I was pointing out earlier, they didn't have a reception longer than 20 yards, but they were just nickeling and diming you so much that it didn't really matter. But that was the game plan going in, was to make Tennessee drive and make Garantano beat you. And to a point, he almost did. And I think that they definitely shouldn't do that with Taiamu, because he's definitely, I think, a way better quarterback than Garantano is. So if you let Taiamu have the room and space with his receivers, with DJ Metcalf, and then guys like that they have them in their receiving core, it's going to be a long game for us.
Yeah, no, 100%. Again, I agree with you 100% that Jaren Garantano played out of his mind, I would say, on Saturday night. But overall, yeah, I mean, I just say wrapping up defensively, I mean, I think the Gamecocks kind of just continue to do what they've done under Will Muschamp, is that bend but don't break, just being just good enough and getting just enough, you know, just enough stops. And thankfully on Saturday night, you know, it was enough to get a win. So you can't be too upset about that. But obviously some things to look at as you go into a game with Ole Miss that is a juggernaut offensively. Special teams wise, really quickly, you know, Parker White 2 for 2 on field goals. He continues to do work, and there's just no other, you know, there's really not much to talk about there. Kudos to Parker White. Just continues to be a reliable option week in, week out. We'll jump into our biggest takeaways from Saturday. Tom, what's your biggest takeaway from the game on Saturday night?
It's that Rico Dowdle, or I would say Rico Dowdle or Tyson Williams, can be as good as a running back as they want to. I think Rico not getting the start probably lit a fire under his butt and made him go out and play to the best of his abilities. And I think that – I don't know what it's going to take to get that Rico every game. And I know that Muschamp said in the offseason that some of the issues Rico was having injury-wise because he wasn't preparing the right way. And maybe that's something that Rico has to do better, is prepare the right way and do the things that he's supposed to when he gets on the field. Because obviously you saw a way different running back from Rico Dallas, and you've seen in the past games since Coastal Carolina. I think he has the ability to play something similar like that every game. Now, will he start averaging 10 yards a carry? No, but is he the kind of back who should be able to make a guy miss and get around 5 or 6 a carry every time? Yeah, absolutely. He has that kind of talent, but just to see it on the field and know that it's there shows you that he can just be as good as a running back as he wants to be.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's the Rico Dowdle he can be, and that's the Rico Dowdle South Carolina needs him to be, honestly, moving forward.
Yeah.
My biggest takeaway from the game, I talked about a little bit earlier, but just Jake Bentley and his toughness and his guts and what he's willing to give to the University of South Carolina. You know, whether we think it'd be a good idea to play Michael Skarnecki a little bit here and there, you know, I can, again, like I said, I can at least definitely support and cheer for the fact that Jake Bentley is willing to give life and limb to get the Gamecocks a win. So I think all Gamecock fans, no matter what your opinion is on Jake Bentley, the way he's played, obviously, again, like I said, if he goes out there and stinks it up against Ole Miss, we're going to continue to be critical. But that is the one thing I can say, Jake Bentley, that he has as much as any other Gamecock quarterback I've seen, his willingness to win, his willingness to sacrifice life and limb for to get the W. Stands out to me when you talk about Jake Bentley. So kudos to him. Getting out some game balls. Tom, I'll start first on offense. Going to go with Rico Dowdle. 14 carries, 140 yards, had a touchdown. Really, really big night for him, obviously. No, it was not a fumble at the goal line, by the way, for all the Tennessee fans. If you, for any reason, if you're just bored and you're tuning into this, or any of the Gamecock fans that have had Tennessee fans chirping at him, was not a fumble at the goal line. So Rico Dowdle, my offensive player of the game, offensive game ball goes to him. On defense, linebacker T.J. Brunson, you know, 14 tackles on the night. You know, that linebacking core that has been much maligned, if you will, obviously hasn't been great. I thought T.J. was all of the field on Saturday night, so my game ball on defense goes to T.J. Brunson. Tom, who are your game balls going to?
Well, for offense, as much as I love to hate Jake Bentley, I think he did what he had to do against Tennessee for us to win. Obviously, he still can't throw an out route to save his life. And the day he hits one, I probably will cry and name my kid Jake Bentley. But I think he had an overall a well game. I think the poor start in the first half has a lot to do with how much ball time dominating Tennessee's offense was, and him not really getting to be on the field, or the offense in general not being on the field. And when they were very up tempo, and you can see it at different times. But overall, I thought he had a really good game. And on defense, I'm going to go DJ Wanham. I mean, he comes back, gets 2 sacks since first came back since Coastal, does the things that he's supposed to do. Tennessee doesn't run at him, and he makes that game-winning play that everybody expects. You know, I wouldn't say a super, superstar like Jadeveon Clowney or Melvin Ingram, but I would say a pretty big star for South Carolina's defense and the team overall. Everyone, he did what we expected out of him, and that's what's great to me is when players under pressure who – I mean, I think it's like what Tom Brady said, what's the difference between good and great players? Performing well under pressure. DJ wanted to perform well under pressure. Obviously, I think he's going to have a big impact the rest of the way.
Yep, 100%. All right, moving into it. It's Ole Miss week. Gamecocks travel to Oxford, Mississippi to face the Rebels. Noon kickoff local time, local time for us. So noon Eastern time kickoff, 11 a.m. local. Crazy early kickoff. I feel bad for our Gamecocks that are going down to Oxford. We're hoping to experience the Grove. Unfortunately, won't be getting much of that experience unless it's in the afternoon. But 11 a.m. kickoff local time on SEC Network. Gamecocks open are a one-point favorite right now. I think they opened actually as an underdog. But South Carolina sits at -1, over-under at 67. Rebels lead the all-time series 8-7, but South Carolina's won the last two. These two teams haven't met up in almost a decade. Gamecocks getting the win in 2008. In Oxford the last time they were there. And then obviously 2009, a game that all Gamecock fans will remember, the Thursday night game, the birth of Sandstorm, Steven Garcia and the crew getting the win over the fourth-ranked Rebels and Jevin Sneed. Houston Nutt was the head coach of that team. That's how long ago that was. So, again, last time they met, South Carolina beating Ole Miss, 16-10 was the final on that one. So talking about the Rebels a little bit, Tom, they're 5-3 overall, but only 1-3 in the SEC. Coming off a bye week in this one, they've had a very suspicious year, obviously, with Matt Luke, first-year head coach, was the interim head coach a year ago. They're on probation. They can't go to a bowl game. It's interesting because coming in this season, I was really curious just what Ole Miss's motivation was going to be this season. And I'm not going to sit here and lie to you that, you know, I've watched every single Ole Miss game or a ton of football for Ole Miss. But obviously, we know what those guys bring to the table. We'll start offensively, Tom. I mean, you've got a guy in Jordan Tamu who's leading the league in passing, a lot of vertical passing. I was going to correct you there for a second. DK Metcalf actually is out for the season with an injury, but they've still got DeMarcus Lodge and A.J. Brown, who's probably considered the best wide receiver in the SEC, if not maybe top three in the country. But overall, yeah, I mean, I think offensively, Tom, that's where it's really going to start for South Carolina on Saturday because, you know, if you come out and can't play solid defense, especially, you know, at this point, I don't know if it's so much of a – how much of it it's the exception and the rule that South Carolina is just not going to get out to a really, really fast start. And if you let Ole Miss come out there and throw it all around and torture secondary and get up 14 or 21 to nothing, I just, you know, I have a sneaking suspicion it might be too much to overcome on Saturday.
I agree. I think that South Carolina does have a really good offense, but if they get out behind by 14 points or anything more than I think the two scores, and it's going to be hard to come back because with a team like Ole Miss, you know they're going to score, and you have to compete with them very much like against Missouri. Have a team that can score. You have to score early and get going fast. Well, I don't say get going fast, but you have to give yourself a chance going into halftime and not be down by more than two scores, I would think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was going to ask you because I think this is kind of an interesting storyline going into the game. The kickoff, like I said, noon Eastern local time, but 11 a.m. is the local time for that one in Oxford, Mississippi. Talk about, Tom, do you think that has any impact on the game itself? I mean, I think a lot of people are happy for South Carolina being the road opponent. They get to go somewhere where it's going to be 11 a.m. It probably won't be a very raucous environment. Probably won't be a very big crowd, to be honest with you. And I wonder if maybe the Gamecocks can, I don't know, catch Ole Miss sleepwalking early.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's going to be anything like Vanderbilt where they just have no fans show up regardless of who they're playing or what time of the game is. But obviously a noon kickoff is something that's going to be really good for us because there's going to be less emotions going, meaning Jake Bentley will probably start out faster and have a better first half than he usually does. But overall, I would just think that, I mean, it kind of matters to a point, but I mean, they got to show up and play. I don't really think the fans would matter if it was a night game, if we were playing like at LSU or something like that. But somewhere like Ole Miss, I don't really think it would have that big of a difference, really. And compared to, I mean, they've already played on the road in Kentucky at night. I think they're probably pretty prepared for it at this point. But overall, I think it's going to help them for it to be a 12 o'clock game and 11 over there. Because who's going to be going that crazy at 11 a.m. screaming their heads off? Like, that probably won't happen.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. I mean, we all know how brutal noon kickoffs are. And I'm just thinking, man, 11, yeah. 11. I mean, I've heard it from friends before that, you know, obviously we're friends with a couple of Texas A&M people. And I've been friends with people that are Nebraska fans. They talk about, oh, yeah, the noon kickoff is the 11 a.m. kickoff here. And I can't imagine. I mean, I just cannot imagine making a noon kickoff worse. I mean, I don't really feel like there's such a thing, but – I don't know. I think it could play somewhat of a part. One thing that's definitely going to play a part is the matchup on the outside. The Gamecocks, again, this is going to be their stiffest test yet as far as the passing game is concerned. You talk about, again, A.J. Brown, DeMarcus Lodge, those guys. I mean, Jordan Tamu, the way he can sling it down the field. And then Scotty Phillips. I mean, the Rebels have a really, really nice option at running back. He's been really, really good for them, a JUCO transfer. You know, again, I talked about it a little bit just a second ago, Tom, but I just really think, you know, because I think South Carolina will be able to score. You know, we're going to get to the Ole Miss defense in just a second. South Carolina, if they can't score in this one, that's a problem. They should be able to score. But, you know, I wonder, is this going to be a shootout to the point where South Carolina, if you score less than 35, you're not going to win? Or can the South Carolina defense, especially with DJ Wanham being back in the lineup, step up, put Jordan Tamu in maybe some uncomfortable situations and, you know, hold this to more of a reasonable, like 24-21 type of game?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on whether or not South Carolina who wins the turnover battle. I think it's going to make a lot of difference. What I'm trying to get at, I think that if Ole Miss gets some turnovers early, if Ole Miss commits some turnovers early, and South Carolina could maybe go on a halftime up 21-7, then you kind of get Ole Miss down, and they don't they don't care about the rest of the game, but you get them thinking, hey, we probably can't come back in this one. So we know our defense isn't going to hold them to 21 points, or even at that point, probably 30 something, but I would just think that if you get out early and get up on them, then you have a good chance to winning, like you said, something like 20. I would say if they get up early, I would say something close to 35 to 24 or something like that. But if it's close all game and Ole Miss has the confidence they can go out and score, then it could end up being a game where you got to score 37 or 40 points to win.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree with you 100%. Moving to the other side of the ball, obviously, we talked about, you know, let's not sugarcoat it. Ole Miss is terrible on defense. They just are. I think they're last in the league on defense. I heard a really interesting stat today in favor of South Carolina where, you know, Arkansas, who I think is 11th or 12th in the league in the SEC in rushing offense, was able to run the football for over 200 yards against that Ole Miss defense. And that's not even getting to how bad they are through the air. Tom, I think there's a real opportunity for South Carolina offensively, again, to build off what they did against Tennessee, keep the running game momentum going, because, again, we saw what the recipe for South Carolina is. And I feel like we talk about it every single week. You run for over 100 yards against a league opponent, South Carolina, there's a good chance they're going to win. You run for over 200, those odds go up astronomically. I feel like, I mean, what I think I saw the stat, South Carolina, they've ran for over 200 yards. They've ran over 200. When they've run over 200 yards in the Will Muschamp Championship, they've lost once. So, you know, you're just not going to lose a game like that when you're that balanced or you have that good of a ground attack. I really think that is somewhere, Tom, that South Carolina can really expose this Ole Miss defense because they've got some real issues up front and really just throughout.
I agree. I think that their defense is very poor, like you said, and that if South Carolina can run the ball, I mean, that's the biggest key to win at this point is running the ball and letting Jake Bentley hit those wide open – not wide open receivers, but let him drop it in the bucket downfield 50 yards of Brian Edwards, because if you get – you sit there and run the ball constantly, then you suck him in and get the safeties up, you know, get them committed to the run, then who are you going to leave one-on-one? Because you got to pick your poison, because you got to pick Debo or Brian or Shai Smith. And you know what Brian and Debo and Shai Smith can do downfield one-on-one. They go up and make catches on you. Obviously, the drops hurt you, but if they don't get a catch, they can probably get a PI or something like that. So it's going to be I would say the biggest factor of this game is going to be how many plays of 20-plus yards does South Carolina have compared to how many plays of 20-plus yards that Ole Miss has. I think that if we can sit there and gash them for a huge amount of yards and really get up and score a lot of points this game, then we're going to be really successful. And obviously scoring points is the key to winning, but I mean, it just makes sense at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a game where you're not going to have a shortage of big plays. I mean, I think that's reflected in the Vegas over-under, 67. I mean, that's not by accident. I think they expect a lot of points in this game. Getting back to the trenches, Tom, because I know you love talking the trenches. Ole Miss has got a pretty good guy at nose tackle, Benito Jones. Will Muschamp talked about him today, basically said he's one of the best defenders he thinks they're going to see all season, I believe is the way he worded it. Don't take my exact quote on that, but he complimented Benito Jones. You know, I think it's going to be really important that a guy like Zach Bailey has a really, really big game on Saturday, because a guy like a Benito Jones, again, can not only disrupt your running game, but obviously just get in Jake Bentley's face and make him make some of the bad, you know, ill-advised decisions that we've seen throughout this season.
Well, I think when you have a player as good as Ole Miss's Nosek is, that he's going to get a lot of double teams all game. And then you're going to say, okay, well, then the rest of the game depends on how well Ole Miss's linebackers play, and I think that's going to have a lot to do with it. And along with the rest of their defense line, because if you only have one good D lineman, you can focus in on him and take him away from the rest of the defense. It's like if you take away the one thing Ole Miss does good, then they have to attack you from other places. And is their defense good enough to attack you from other places? And I don't really think so. I mean, I probably couldn't name more than three players on their defense off the top of my head. And that just shows you that, you know, if you look at, I would just say, and not talking about their defense line specifically, I'm going to their cornerbacks, but like I said, you have Shy, Debo, and Brian. Like, one of them is going to have to be left one-on-one. You're going to take that every time, 10 out of 10, and let them go make a play for you.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I'll tell you this, before we get into our biggest or our key matchups, one of the most intriguing things I'm looking at, because – you know, it was South Carolina's and Ole Miss's wide receiving core. People were saying these are the top two in the SEC. I would say people probably still say Ole Miss, especially with A.J. Brown leading the way. People will probably say they are the cream of the crop of the SEC. Meanwhile, South Carolina's receiving core, you know, maybe has not lived up to the expectations. I think that's a fair thing to say with some of the games, the drops they had, if you will. I'm really intrigued to see how this South Carolina receiving core comes out on Saturday. Do they take it personal and maybe have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and want to show, like, hey, we belong with Ole Miss. You know, our guys are just as good, Debo and Brian Edwards. Because, you know, Ole Miss has got a guy out too. Again, I talked about DK Metcalf is out. So I'm just curious, do Debo Samuel and Brian Edwards take it upon themselves and put a chip on their shoulder and say, hey, we're going to outperform A.J. Brown and DeMarcus Lodge. We're going to show why everybody had us picked up there and why, you know what, we may actually be the best wide receiver corps in the SEC. I'm really intrigued to watch that matchup overall. Those two wide receiving corps go at it.
No, I mean, I definitely agree. I think that's going to be – you're going to see a lot of big plays out of both corps, whether it's South Carolina or Ole Miss's receivers. I think that's going to be probably a big key of the game is who can limit the other receiving corps to the least explosive plays and making tackles in general, not just on the outside with screens and stuff like that. But I think it's obviously a big key. I think if Brian and Debo and Shy can have a great game like last week and I don't think technically they had any drops because the play with Shy got called back for the defensive pass interference. So have another game like that, and you know, you might come out of Ole Miss with a 40 bomb on them.
Yeah, no, again, it should be a whole lot of fun to watch because there's going to be some guys on the field on Saturday that can make some big plays, and some guys are going to be playing on Sundays for sure. All right, let's jump into key matchups to watch. Tom, what's your key matchup you're going to be looking for?
It's going to be Rashad Fenton versus A.J. Brown. I think that Rashad is secretly having a really good season, and I think he's not getting talked about a lot. I think that he'll probably end up being a guy who goes in the third or fourth round this year or even earlier than that if he continues the trend. Maybe if he comes out on Saturday and against, I would say, NFL caliber receiver and A.J. Brown and comes in and maybe shuts him down or limits him to only a couple catches for 20 or 30 yards, and that'll boost his stock up a lot. But for South Carolina's defense to have a great game, I would think that Rashad Fenton has to do his job well and limit A.J. Brown.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I mean, excuse me, obviously that's a huge matchup for the Gamecocks, but that's a huge matchup for Rashad Fenton and his draft stock. I mean, I definitely agree with you and think if you're a guy, hey, you're serious about playing at the next level, you got to be able to shut down a guy like A.J. Brown, no question. excuse me, sorry. My key matchup to watch, guard Zach Bailey against Benito Jones, the nose tackle. And I talked about this a little bit earlier. Benito Jones, I would say he's probably their best defensive player. I just think he's a guy, if you can stop him, you can have a lot of success. But obviously that point of attack, it won't just be Zach Bailey. Obviously Sadarius Hutcherson will be on that as well, and Donnell Stanley in the middle. But just making sure that he's not a disruptor, he's not someone that's getting in the backfield is going to be a big thing on Saturday. Moving into the biggest keys of the game, you know, Tom, I'll go ahead and start. It's going to seem so simple at this point, but just get out of the gate and start fast. Not even so much starting fast, but just not playing yourself out of the game early, because the thing about it is this team is falling into a very dangerous trend where they just, you know, they seem to just fall behind early and they have to come back. And I really don't know what the answer, like, you know, how you coach that or how you approach that, but you know, you just can't live and die like that, because too often or not, you're going to die. You know what I mean? You just can't always make that comeback. So I think it's just so vital for South Carolina to be able to come out and start better, maybe get an early lead, God forbid, and, you know, put themselves in much, much better position. So, Tom, your biggest key to the game is what?
I'm going to go with making tackles on defense for us. I counted it up earlier, and not including DK Metcalf, but that Ole Miss has 7 receivers with receptions of 48 yards or more on the year. It means they have a single reception of 48 yards or more, which is insane to me that 7 different guys have done that. And then you look on the running backs, they have 4 running backs with runs of 40-plus, and Jordan Tayamu obviously is a threat on the ground. That doesn't include him. So I think making tackles and something against Ole Miss that we have to be very alert for the screen game and make tackles in space. And maybe this is a game where Steven Montag can redeem himself and make a big tackle or break up a big play or something like that. But they just have to make tackles on defense and not let them bust what should be a 5-yard play into a 40-yard play. You can't have things like that happen on Saturday and expect to win.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. All right, our favorite time of the show. Going to put you on the spot again. Tom, what's your prediction? What's going to happen on Saturday?
I'm gonna pick the Gamecocks in this one. I'm going to go South Carolina 33, Ole Miss 27. I think that South Carolina as a whole is just a better team, more talented. I think that there's a lot of things that South Carolina does really well that they can take advantage of Ole Miss's defense. And that not that our defense is absolutely just going to shut them down, but Ole Miss really hasn't had just, you know, an insane amount of success if you look at their schedule. Against Alabama, they got really killed, but, I mean, that's everybody against Alabama this year. Against, you know, LSU, they got killed. Against Auburn, they lost at home, which is not really the best sign in the world. They barely beat Arkansas. You know, they hung 70 bombs on University of Louisiana Monroe in Southern Illinois, which I guess congrats for them on doing that. But overall, I just think – I'm not going to say they're overhyped on offense, but I think that there's a lot that they do on offense. Their stats get bolstered because of just garbage time and stuff like that. But as a whole, I would just think that we're just a better team and that we're going to get a couple of big plays and turnovers Saturday that calls the pass for us to be able to win a comfortable road win by 6 points.
Doesn't Ole Miss feel a lot like don't they feel a lot like Missouri, but with a worse defense?
Yeah, I mean, really.
They're pretty similar, like you're saying, because you're talking about the inflated offensive numbers, and I just feel like that's Missouri's MO every season. Getting in my prediction, though, this one's so tough for me because I want to pick South Carolina so bad because I'm sort of on the same train you are, Tom, is that I just don't believe in Ole Miss whatsoever. I mean, I'm not sure there's much to believe in. But, you know, watching what Arkansas did to him, I was able to catch some of that game. And just knowing the kind of team they have, I mean, this is a team, you know, I picked South Carolina. I think a lot of us picked South Carolina to lose to Ole Miss before the season. I don't know. I just think going into a road environment, I know it won't be a raucous environment, but, you know, I'm going to pick Ole Miss to win this one. I need to see South Carolina prove it to me on the road and prove to me then get off to a better start. I've got Ole Miss right now winning this one. I'll say 31-24 Ole Miss right now. I definitely think, again, this is a coin flip game that I think South Carolina can get the W, but I need to see Jake Bentley and this offense prove it to me that they're going to show up and step up and win a game on the road. I know this isn't a ranked opponent in Ole Miss, but this is a very, very big game. Has a lot of pressure on it, a lot of different implications, you know, for South Carolina just getting to a bowl game, you know, what bowl game they're going to get to. So it's one that I'm just really, really intrigued to watch. Again, I think it's a coin flip, but right now I'm going to say Ole Miss wins it, but wouldn't be shot at all South Carolina pulled off the W. So go ahead and shoot me your hate tweets, whatever. That's fine. It's all good. But we're going to jump into some listener questions before we close everything up. We've actually got a couple from Instagram, and then a couple of you actually left us some voicemail. So I really do appreciate that. We're going to run through those really quickly. We'll start with the ones on Instagram. We'll run through these pretty fast. Ben Smitty 2017 says, do you think Tennessee's defensive line was bad or was our run blocking better? Tom, I'll let you take that one.
I wouldn't say Tennessee's defense line's bad. I don't think they're the best in the world. I don't think they're Missouri or Kentucky by any means, but I think they have average SEC East defensive line, but I think that our offensive line also had a really good game. I think Zach Bailey had probably one of the better games of his career against Tennessee. I saw a lot of NFL great blocks out of him, but overall, I would say more South Carolina's offensive line had a better game.
Right. All right. Joshua_Frederiki says Gamecocks finish 8-4? I'm going to say no. I think the ceiling is 7-5 right now. I think best case scenario you're splitting with Ole Miss and Florida. I don't see you winning both. I mean, obviously, I hope they do, but I'm going to see best case scenario 7-5 right now. J_Todd015 says, do you think the run game will continue to produce as well as it did against Tennessee for the remainder of the season? What do you think, Tom?
I mean, it depends on if whether or not Rico Dowdle is ahead of Case in the rest of the games, because I think that he's – I would say Tyson's the most consistent back, but I would go with Rico being the most talented, and you could get the – he has the highest ceiling to me. And I think that if he can come out the gates and run like he did against Tennessee early against – like if he can run against Ole Miss like he did against Tennessee early and get that confidence going, then maybe for the rest of the season he can do it. But for right now, I would say that they're not going to rush for 200 yards. Other than maybe Ole Miss, I would not say they rush for 200 yards again. Other than Ole Miss and Chattanooga, I think Florida and Clemson probably limit them to less than 120.
All right, absolutely. Gordon B789 says, thoughts on DeCarion Joyner. Do you think he will do a good job when Bentley leaves? I don't know if he'll play when Bentley leaves. I mean, that's kind of, you know, it's something to be seen. I really hope he gets in against Chattanooga. I just like to see him on the field and what he can do. I don't know that he will. I think especially with it, that's going to be senior night or senior day, whatever. So he probably won't get on the field, to be honest, but I would love to see him on the field at some point. But really his career is up in the air, because if I had to give an honest prediction right now, I think he's going to be a guy that eventually transfers if he's not willing to change positions. But again, that's just my speculation. You never know. So, here's a good one. Ryan_Crisp_JRC. After seeing it for the first time in a while, how much do you think we will see the Wildcat? Tom, what do you think?
I mean, I think in the red zone is something they can use a lot. Other than that, I wouldn't expect them to pull it out a bunch unless it's like fourth and two or third and two and they just need a big conversion and like a really key part of the game. But other than very – very deep in the red zone or maybe in a key play, I wouldn't really expect to see it a lot.
Absolutely. All right, cool. We're going to try out these voicemails real quick. I'm just going to hold her to the microphone here. Let's see how it sounds. Oh, I got to put it on speaker. Sorry. We're already screwing up.
Yeah, good one, Chris.
I'm already screwing up. Okay, let's go. All right. This one comes from Jonathan, I believe. Jonathan.
Hi, this is Jonathan. I just want to talk about the Tennessee game, how our offense was so dominant towards the end of the quarter, but in the first half, our defense just let up crucial third downs. How can we fix that?
Okay, so I think he's talking about the third downs. How can we fix the third downs? Talking about the offense was dominant towards, I think he's going to say, the end of the first half. But really the third downs, Tom, I think that's a really interesting – and thanks for the question, Jonathan. I think you got to continue to do what you're going to do. I mean, it's weird that DJ Wonnum comes back and you get worse on third down. But like you were saying, I think Jaren Garantano, he's getting hit every single third down, just making plays that are sort of out of his mind, out of this world. So, again, I don't think the third down conversion issue should be something where Gamecock fans are hitting the panic button after one game. I mean, they were kind of due to have a game like that after the type of season they've had on the money down.
Well, I mean, I think that them playing so off in man coverage and not being impressed man and giving them 8 yards regardless of the down and distance had a lot to do with them being able to dump it off low and giving Garantano quick throws to let the receivers make plays. And they just made more plays than we did in the first half. But for the rest of the season, I don't really consider that big of a problem.
Yeah, agree. Same deal. All right, here's another one. If we can get this speaker working. All right, here we go. And leave us your names in these voicemails too, because I don't think this one has a name, so I have no clue who to thank, but thank you anyways. Here we go.
All right, so with his last game, it was by far Bentley's best. He was basically the quarterback we've needed all season. But the one thing I feel we can improve on is that I can't stand seeing us putting our cornerbacks out. They have 7 to 8 yard cushion and just giving a free release on these wide receivers. We're getting beaten, shipped away in that short passing game, and it's causing for a lot of hurt. But thanks, guys. Spurs up.
It's kind of ironic because that's exactly what you were just talking about, Tom.
I just like lit up.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's funny because I think defensive coaches, they sort of, they always say, like, we got a guy that we feel like he's comfortable and can play man. You know, we're going to play man. But if we don't think he can cover one-on-one in man and we got to put him in zone and play off, we're going to do it. And I think in some situations – South Carolina maybe getting exposed in some situations where, let's be honest, a guy like Keyshawn Nixon may not be the best guy to put in a man coverage with a big-bodied wide receiver from Tennessee. And I think that has to be one thing going this week where you're like, man, that is a little concerning as far as that goes. But, again, I think, like you said, it was some of a conservative game plan where you knew Tennessee had those big-body wide outs. You wanted to keep everything in front of you. And it is 100% frustrating to watch, but, you know, that's just kind of what you have to live with when they do that. So,
I mean, they basically, in my opinion, I think they came into this game thinking we're going to make Garantano beat us. I mean, I said that earlier, and I think that they just didn't want to give him anything deep whatsoever and let him have a chance of making a big play, getting some Uncle Mo on the side of Tennessee. But I just think that was the game plan going in, is you're going to have to limit them and not let them make the big play and make Garantano drive down the field consistently and beat you.
Yeah, and hell, I think they might have been pretty surprised with, you know, like you said, make Jaren Garantano beat you, and he made some throws that we didn't think he could make. So sometimes you just got to tip your cap to the other guy. Yeah. That's what I'll say. Again, appreciate the voicemails. Our listener questions come through on Instagram, the questions on our story. So leave us questions there. Also, that number for the voicemails, if you do want to call in and leave us a voicemail, that's really something I'd love to kind of get fired up and going. The number for that is 843-790-3377. So if you want your voice heard on the Spurs Up Show, be sure to call that number, leave your voicemail, give us your thoughts on really anything with the Gamecocks. I think that's pretty much going to do it. Tom, anything else we've got to get to?
Not anything for me. Spurs up. Hope we get a dub Saturday.
Yep. Hopefully we're watching the Gamecocks get a dub on Saturday, but obviously for us, we'll be back next week to recap the game and obviously preview the Gamecocks' upcoming game against the Florida Gators. But we do have Derek Scott, an interview upcoming, an absolutely fantastic dude. I was able to sit down with him for about 30 minutes or so, talk about kind of his career with calling the Gamecocks, kind of how he got into the business, and much more. So please enjoy this interview with Derek Scott, the voice of the Gamecocks, and we will catch you next time. All right, joining us on the Spurs Up Show today, he is the voice of Gamecocks basketball and baseball, a man whose voice you can say is as smooth as silk. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome to the show Derek Scott. Derek, again, appreciate you taking the time, and really glad you came on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite. Glad to jump on with you, talk some Gamecock hoops.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to start, before we get into that, because obviously I do want to talk about hoops. You obviously the voice of both basketball and baseball. I want to talk about sort of your background a little bit. I was able to go online, go to the Google machine, saw you graduated from Marshall, did a little bit of play-by-play at Ohio. Just talk about kind of your path to get to South Carolina, because I know obviously in the world of sports broadcasting, it can be a long and winding road at times.
Yeah, that's for sure. Everybody's got their own unique story. Mine, I think, is really unique in that I stepped away from the game, so to speak, to some degree for a number of years. I was still dabbling in it, but not from the standpoint of really pursuing full-time commitment in the broadcast world, but always kept my feet in the water. That took place when I moved here to South Carolina back in 2007. And then always, as I said, tried to stay close to it. And through really just the process of proving myself to a new set of evaluators here in Columbia, got the opportunity to move into the full-time chair when Andy Demetra moved over to Georgia Tech to take on that new experience and opportunity. And so got back into the full-time play-by-play situation that I'd handled when I was at Ohio University, as you alluded to, from 1998 until I left Athens there in the spring of 2007.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It sounds like definitely a long path. You talked about, you know, when Andy Demetra left South Carolina, and it sounds like you're a guy that you take every challenge on head on, if you will. When Andy Demetra left, I mean, obviously he's a guy that South Carolina fans got pretty accustomed to. I mean, anytime you're on the call for two national championships in baseball or something of that magnitude, people are going to know who you are, right? They're going to recognize your voice, kind of associate you as the voice. And then Andy Demetra left. Talk about what it was like for you personally, you know, taking on that challenge of kind of asserting yourself now as the new voice of the Gamecocks. You've obviously done a fantastic job. What was that like when you first stepped into that role? Did you feel any type of pressure, or you just kind of took it on as, hey, I'm just going to be myself and give my best to the Gamecocks?
Well, I felt pressure, but that was really coming from myself because right. The opportunity to be an SEC play-by-play announcer, those are few and far between. And for folks like Ray Tanner, and Liz McMillan to have the confidence in me to give me that opportunity, I did not want to let them down or disappoint them in any way, shape, or form. The flip side of that is when I took over at Ohio, I was taking the baton from a guy named Dick Shore, who had been the voice of the Ohio Bobcats for 30 years. So I'd been down that road before, And Dixie was as beloved a character as there could be in a community like that, a smaller community. So yeah, I knew the drill. And then I was also somewhat fortunate in that I'd been here and a lot of fans, not all of them, but some of the fans were somewhat familiar with me from filling in when Andy, for instance, would be doing basketball. I'd take on a lot of the early season baseball games. And then when the SEC Network came into existence, the SEC Plus broadcasts that were happening, I was doing a lot of basketball and baseball then. So I at least did have familiarity, I think, with a decent amount of our fan base in that regard. And that, I think, was beneficial when I slid into the full-time gig 2 seasons ago.
Absolutely. Did you do football at Ohio as well?
Yes. Yeah, football with Jim Grobe as the head coach up there before he moved to Wake Forest, running triple option. And then eventually Frank Solich, when Frank came in and really got that program going again. I was fortunate enough to work with him his first 2 years at Ohio before I relocated. And obviously since then, he's done an amazing job, made that such a consistent program, which is, if you were ever around that program back in the day, you'd almost be stunned to see the success they've had over the long haul, knowing how challenging it was for them to win consistently in football for the better part of 3 decades.
Yeah, no, 100%. What I was getting to there is that, you know, South Carolina is one of those, I don't know how unique it is, I guess you could say, across college athletics, but I think it is somewhat unique that South Carolina has a different football announcer, play-by-play guy in Todd Ellis than basketball and baseball. Talk about, do you have any type of relationship with Todd Ellis, and, you know, what kind of relationship is that like? I imagine both being, you know, kind of peers, if you will, both play-by-play guys. Talk about kind of that relationship you have with Todd.
Todd and I have a great relationship. I got to know Todd back when I was at Ohio, and we were both at that point in time doing games for schools that were part of what was then the ISP network. That was before ISP was bought out by IMG, you know, to play the initial bingo game here. And Todd and I would get together when all of the various play-by-play announcers at the schools that ISP handled their networks for would get together down in Winston-Salem. So I played golf with him a little bit there, so knew him a little bit. And then when I moved here in 07, had a chance to build that relationship further, because – for those that don't know, I'm a full-time IMG employee with Gamecock Sports Marketing. My day job, so to speak, is being involved with the sales efforts for the Gamecocks. And so even before I was doing play-by-play, I was involved in selling a lot of the sponsorships around the radio programming, like the Coach's Show and Inside the Roost. And so, yeah, I've gotten to know Todd really well over the last decade or so. And I think we have the ability to really, you know, help each other out in terms of feedback from someone who's been there and listening a little bit differently than fans would be. And so, yeah, Todd is, he's a great guy, and gosh, nobody has more, I think, fire in their gut for Gamecock athletics than that guy. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I don't want to put you too much on the spot here, but I'm going to do it anyways. You're obviously the voice of Gamecocks basketball and baseball. Do you have any preference of, say, which is your favorite sport to call for any reason? Are they both equal to you, or do you have a preference at all?
You know, I'm a freak. I love all sports. If I could do hockey, I mean, I love watching hockey. So there's very little. I'm a horse racing guy. I mean, everyone talk derby on this podcast, you let me know. So, no, I can't say that I do, because I'm just a sports smorgasbord kind of guy. Basketball and baseball are such completely different animals in terms of the process. And I think people will tell you you're better at one or the other. But in terms of what I enjoy and seasons I look forward to, I certainly love both of them. The only challenge sometimes is when they overlap and trying to make sense of keeping up with both sides of that. And you get into some interesting travel conundrums trying to burn the candle at both ends a little bit. But other than that, no, I enjoy both of them, and certainly enjoy the coaching staffs I work with both sports.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Talk about your, you know, it's funny, not to date myself or anything, back when I was in school at USC Aiken my last year there, I actually did kind of a broadcasting internship where I would call the games, the baseball games for the USC Aiken team on their web stream, if you will. And I know how important it is to have a really, really good co-host, someone you gel with. I think I can, you know, I don't take the words out of your mouth. I think I can speak for you, though, when I say that you're blessed to have two really, really good co-hosts in both basketball and baseball. Talk about those guys and your relationship with them.
Well, you know, in basketball, the judge, Casey Manning, is an institution in terms of what he means to this community. I mean, when you talk about the first African-American basketball player at a school in the South, that's a pretty significant landscape right there. And then going on professionally to do the things he's done in the legal profession and being a highly respected judge such as he is, and then the backside of that being a complete and unique character. I've never met anybody like Casey, and I'd say if you kept me on the earth for 500 years, I could safely say the same thing at that point in time. So he is an absolute trip to be around and work with, and just a great person. And then Tommy Moody on the other side, the encyclopedia. He is a guy who loves baseball about as much as anybody I've ever been around. I mean, he truly lives and dies in that world. There are times he will send out a text because he doesn't tweet. He will send a text to a small group, includes me and some guys who've been in the media relations business with baseball over the years, like Andrew Kiddick and Kenton. And he will be texting about baseball, and not Gamecock baseball, like the season will be over with. But Tommy will be texting about something he has seen, and oftentimes it still involves a former Gamecock on the major league or even the minor league level. And it just makes you laugh sometimes because it's like, man, this dude 24/7 is just absolutely absorbed with Gamecock baseball and baseball in general. And you can always count on Tommy to know what's going on all fronts in that sport. So yeah, I'm blessed to work with him as well, because man, he's going to be bringing it every single day, because no one cares more about that program than Tommy does and the sport in general. And then on top of that, he's also always guaranteed to make you look bad because he's got 20 plus years on me and doesn't look it at all and takes great care of himself. So you never have to worry about the old dude being someone that drags you down. If anything, there's times I'm embarrassed about what I do on road trips compared to what he does from an eating and exercise standpoint.
Absolutely. Well, obviously you do a fantastic job, Derek. And I think what gets sort of taken for granted is how good of a job you do, but the preparation that goes behind it. You know, it's like anything else in life with, whether it's your career or it's sports especially, you know, people don't see the work that goes in behind the scenes to get the product they're viewing or listening to. Just talk about the preparation that you guys put into, you know, each and every broadcast you do, because I know you guys do a ton of prep work ahead of time.
Well, I think the funny thing is with that is the never-ending battle of trying to figure out what matters and what doesn't from a prep standpoint, because you're trying to digest everything. And then you got to figure out, okay, how much of the stuff that I want to have ready to go for this broadcast is going to have to do with the opponent? Because I get intrigued by the other team. I like telling their story too. But then you also know there's a segment of your audience that doesn't give a rip who's on that other team. They are there for nothing but Garnet and Black. And so you have to kind of figure out what are the stories that are worth telling, even if they're not about the home team, so to speak. And then also trying to get into, you know, stories versus data, because numbers can tell a lot of stories and some people really can get into it, especially in the analytics age. But you know, you also can lose people in that world. And you start diving into Ken Pomeroy's website, I can find some numbers that'll make your head swim, but that's kind of the problem. Who's going to really appreciate what you're talking about? Sometimes not enough people. So you have to figure out what to carry forward and what to just, you know, put in the round file. So it is challenging at times, but I do feel like that most good broadcasters will tell you that what you end up when the broadcast is over, when you're walking away, you're going to have a ton more stuff that you never got to than that you did. And that's probably the way it has to be, because every once in a while you'll have a dog of a game where you're going to need to clean out, you know, the bottom drawers in terms of figuring out something to keep it entertaining. Mm-hmm. So you have to be prepared for the worst and then hope for the best, because when a game gets exciting, all that stuff goes out the window. You're just calling the play-by-play and trying to make sure you paint the accurate picture in terms of what people are, you know, hoping to see through your voice, and then making sure that, you know, the ultimate question is answered. And that is, of course, what's the dang score and how much time is left?
No, absolutely, for sure. That moves me into, you know, you've obviously called a ton of good baseball games. You obviously called the Final Four. Has there been a call that's been your favorite call since you've been the voice of the Gamecocks? Anything that stuck out, any moment that was above any other that, you know, you enjoyed calling the most?
Well, there's a couple. Certainly in basketball terms, the win over Duke, because the atmosphere in Greenville was so electric And just to be able to pull that upset and know you were advancing to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, that was amazing. And knowing how you were doing it, who you were eliminating, hard to imagine anything better than that. But then also being in Madison Square Garden the next week and doing the same thing with the win over Florida and knowing you were going to the Final Four, those two are going to be hard to top no matter how long I'm in this chair. In baseball, there's been a couple just specific moments. You know, along the way with what Mark Kingston was able to do last year in terms of turning things around, when the season looked like it might be heading the wrong direction due to injuries and so forth, and seeing that team finish off East Carolina in that regional, not even the final, you know, not even the clinching regional win, but that night game against ECU in their stadium, that was pretty special too. I'd say those are right there at the top of the list. And you know, going back a few years, I have always, when we had basketball, baseball overlap, Andy would always be with basketball, and I've had the opportunity to call a few really good Carolina Clemson baseball games. You know, going back before I was the full-time voice of Gamecock baseball, and there have been some special moments there too. You know, I can remember Michael Roth dominating on a Friday night at Founders Park, and the electric atmosphere we had there, and then a couple of great games up in Greenville at Fluor Field as well, and some Saturday wins. I remember Jackie Bradley going out over the their version of the Green Monster, which ironically he now gets to do with the real deal, and those are pretty special moments too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Good moments for Gamecock fans as well, for sure. You talked a little about basketball, and obviously that's one of the big reasons I wanted to bring you on, Derek. I know obviously you were on the call for that one. I was in the building. South Carolina got off to quite a bit of an auspicious start, if you will. Granted, an exhibition game, but a 77-72 loss to Augusta. The season officially tips off, you could say, next week against USC Upstate. But talk about just why, you know, fans, because you and I, again, both watched, why you think fans shouldn't overreact to the exhibition loss. Again, Frank Martin after the game seemed to be, I think, a much more relaxed and calm about it than maybe some South Carolina fans were, especially on the social media wave.
So, well, just
go ahead.
Yeah, well, social media is no place for reason. We all know that.
It's not a good place for smart.
We're all guilty of it. Well, you know, it's just, it grabs you. I mean, there's plenty of times where I'll see something, a response to something I've tweeted, and I want to go right back at somebody, and you just have to set the phone aside and leave it alone because there's no good that comes out of escalating that situation. But, no, Frank's point was, and I'll make an example here, but to start with his point. His point was, look, I'm not in an exhibition game looking to grind things out. I'm not going to call set up plays. I'm going to let guys free flow. I want to see different combinations. And then some of that also is his frustration over the way some of his veterans were performing, that he was not willing to, you know, to give them the stage back. So, you know, what's frustrating, you cannot deny that seeing Chris Silva do what he's done to frustrate fans so much in the past with the four silly fouls, well, that's frustrating because you just can't deny that that's the sort of thing you're tired of seeing, and he needs to not do anymore. But the backside of that is he still only had four, and he could easily have impacted that game in the final 5 to 8 minutes, and Frank wasn't having it. He just wasn't going to put him back in there. As Frank said, look, if he's going to keep doing this, we got to learn to play those crunch time minutes without him anyway, so let's just figure it out tonight. Same thing with, you know, not using any of his timeouts late. You know, that didn't shock me insofar as last year, the exhibition against Virginia Tech. I thought it was at the time interesting that he said something to me off the cuff, not publicly, but just he pointed out that he was almost, I think, a little surprised as close as he and Buzz Williams are. The Buzz was doing a little more coaching than he anticipated in that exhibition last year. And that just wasn't how Frank saw things. He doesn't view exhibitions that way. So that didn't shock me to see it happening against Augusta, because I know he was frustrated with, you know, some of his elder statesmen and the fact that they weren't playing as well as they have been during practice. And then he, you know, with Trey Campbell going in, he wasn't about to put him back out there on that gimpy ankle. Wasn't going to happen. And this team was, you know, much better with Trey on the ball than they were without him on Friday night. So no, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, that there's nothing serious or no reason to be frustrated with it, but also don't think it's any reason to get into too much of a tizzy. Let's see how things shake out. These first three home games, let's see where this team is after those before we'll worry too much about what happened with Augusta on Friday night, because I guarantee you, if it's close late in that one, he won't hesitate to use a timeout, break out the grease board, draw up a play for an isolation for whoever the odd hand is, and see if he can get the best out of that.
Yeah, now I 100% agree with you. I don't think South Carolina fans should be hitting the panic button, if you will. I will say, I honestly, going into that game, I wasn't surprised. I'm actually from that local area in North Augusta, and you know, that's a proud basketball program. They've got a really, really good head coach. They're constantly in and out of their tournament, if you will. So, I mean, I honestly wasn't surprised how tightly Augusta played South Carolina. I really wasn't surprised they beat them either. So, I don't think it's something, again, like you said, South Carolina fans should be looking too much into. Talk about, you know, you talked about Chris Silva a little bit. What's the ceiling for him, do you think, in your mind? Because he's still got some things to work on. But, I mean, he's a guy that I think could be – a real, real difference maker, and, you know, an all SEC caliber player, and possibly maybe even an all American type talent. What do you see for him?
Well, he definitely, I mean, he was an all SEC performer last year, so I certainly anticipate those sorts of accolades to be in the realm of possibility again this year, because nobody plays harder than Chris. Nobody does. But the question is, can you find a way to play a little smarter? And some of the things the coaches will talk about when they're working with him one-on-one are things that at times seem almost elementary, but for a guy who just hasn't played that much basketball, he just didn't grow up around it, at times he still struggles with them. I mean, even as simple as when he's posting up and turns to shoot, he sometimes will hold the ball low down around his shoulders as opposed to getting it fully extended and using that length that he has to shoot over people. And he makes it harder than it needs to be, but that's because he just was never trained as a youngster to kind of create those good habits. And so you start trying to, you know, to break off the bad habits. But no, I think Chris is a guy who absolutely has the potential to put up, you know, those sorts of numbers that get you in all American conversations. But again, a lot of that just comes down to Chris, and can he manage to stay out of the foul trouble that has plagued him on and off for 3 years. I mean, it's like Frank said, you know, he doesn't need to make every offensive possession a fist fight. You know, it wouldn't hurt him every once in a while to step away. If he's the trail guy going from defense to offense, don't be afraid to shoot that three when you catch it at the top of the key. Don't be afraid to step out into the 15-foot range. And he's got relatively good touch. It's not like he's, you know, a guy there throwing up, you know, cinder blocks. And so, yeah, you see that and you realize there's potential for a lot more offensively than you necessarily get out of him on a regular basis. But the other thing I'll say about Chris is, because of that late timeline and when he picked up the game, I also wouldn't be shocked if he's a guy that you see maybe 5 years from now and people are like, wow, that guy is so much more advanced than I ever thought he would be offensively, because he just, you know, he's a little late in terms of where he is on in that, you know, the blooming of his game. So he'll continue to play professionally, whether it be in Europe or America. And I could easily see that being something that people talk about him a few years down the road, because the work ethic is there. The attitude is there. The smarts are there. Sometimes it's just a matter of perfecting some of the skills.
Absolutely. So I talked about the ceiling for Chris Silva, not about this team overall. You know, South Carolina returns 4 of 5 starters. You only lose Frank Booker and Wesley Myers off last year's squad. Talk about, you know, you have an influx of youngsters coming in, but some guys that I was, some guys I was really impressed with, honestly, on Friday night with AJ Lawson, TJ Moss. I thought Keyshawn Bryant looked okay. Just talk about kind of your, you know, if you had to give a guess right now, sort of what you think the ceiling for this team is, and do you think South Carolina can make a run to get back to the NCAA tournament?
I definitely think that is possible. It's challenging in that this schedule is so stiff. I mean, there's so much talent, and sometimes I think, you know, it's hard to pick this up if fans are just looking at, you know, the preseason top 25. But if you're going to tell me in non-conference alone that you're going to have a road trip to Michigan, a road trip to Wyoming, you know, home games with Virginia and Clemson, a neutral site with Providence, and possibly another neutral site with Michigan. I mean, that is some absolute deep stuff to be getting into. And then the backside of that is, I, as I told you, I've been here 10, 11 years. This league has not been this good in any of those 10 or 11 years. It's just staggering knowing how kind of mediocre basketball had gotten in this league for a few years to look up now and see three top 10 teams nationally preseason, and nobody's arguing that any of them don't deserve it. You know, nobody's going to look at what Tennessee and Auburn did last year and question why they're there this year. Nobody's ever going to look at Kentucky and question why they are there. And then you get Mississippi State, obviously, with LSU being those sorts of teams that people, you know, are putting in their top 25 right now as well. You know, I just can't believe how good this league got in about 3 years. But it all starts with hiring good coaches. When you look around this league, there's nobody left coaching really that you question their chops. And that was always kind of the case. You always had a guy here or there. You're like, wonder how they landed with him. But you don't see that now. And so, yeah, I just think this league's going to be a ton of fun to watch and compete in. But that also means wins going to be challenging to come by, home or away, most nights. But getting back to your original question, yes, I think this team absolutely has what it takes to find its way in the NCAA tournament, because the strength schedule is going to be lights out. So you just got to find a way to win. I mean, if you win 17 like you did last year, I don't think you're getting in. But you're going to be knocking on the door based on who those 17 are going to come against this year. But I definitely think with the talent and the depth that's there, that once you get Alonzo Frank back in there into that rotation and get him healthy and another big body, you're going to have some tools where you don't have to go, oh gosh, what happens if so-and-so gets in quick foul trouble or has an injury. There's no one dude who you say, oh boy, what are we going to do without him for a long stretch of time? I really believe that. I don't think you want to play without Chris Silva on a regular basis, but you're going to be able to manage it between Hase and Frank to be able to step in there alongside Mike Kotsar. You've got some guys that are going to be able to be productive. I really think that to be the case. Now, let's still got to see if they'll do it when the band's playing, but I'm really anxious to get it started and start figuring that out.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with your analysis there, and definitely the league itself and that out-of-conference schedule is brutal for sure. Before we let you go, Derek, I just want to get your quick take on the baseball team. Obviously, like you talked about, watching Mark Kingston's club this past season, their progression from, you know, losing in the midweek to, I think it was Presbyterian or Furman, to obviously getting to the Super Regionals, being a win away from the College World Series. To do that in his first season was a remarkable job. Just talk about your quick thoughts on the job he's done to this point, and not so much predictions for 2019, but what you think the projection could be for this club losing so many, you know, veteran guys from this past season squad.
Yeah, it's crazy to look at a roster and try and figure out how in the world so many guys all ended up leaving at the same time. But then you stop and go, it could have been worse. I mean, you could easily have had Olson and Hopkins joining them in that parade out the door. So look on the bright side that you've got some talent coming back, those two, and of course Campbell Noah is a guy who had a great summer. But nonetheless, you're gonna have to have some questions answered by some unknown fellas in the everyday lineup. You're gonna have to figure out, you know, who can swing the bat consistently against SEC pitching and produce. And then on the pitching side, just hated seeing Logan Chapman going down because he was certainly going to be one of those guys you had to lean on pretty heavily on the weekend. And so now, behind Carmen Majinski, there's a lot of question marks about who fills out that rotation. I think you're going to see a team that will be kind of like where Major League Baseball started trending this year. You're going to see a lot more outings where they're not worried about starters giving you six. It's like, man, how about you get us through that lineup one good time and hold them in check, and then we're going to start handing the ball around. There's better depth on the pitching staff, even though there's nowhere close to near the high-end talent that was on last year's pitching staff. You got more guys that are capable of throwing strikes this year, because that obviously just about drove Skylar Meade into the loony bin a few times last year. And I don't think that'll be nearly as stressful. He's got a brand new baby. That'll stress him out plenty. I don't think he'll need to worry about that. But no, it's going to be interesting to see how Coach Kingston pieces all this together, because there are so many unknowns. And this league, as we all know, is unforgiving every single year to people who are having to figure it out again. Like, you know, in this instance, you talk about trying to reload a little bit, rebuild, reload, call what you will. But I will say this, I love, just underscore love, what these coaches are doing right now on the recruiting trail. Man, I mean, you know, Current and Meade and those guys, they are getting it done. And so as long as you see that kind of track record and what they're doing in terms of building for the future, even if this year, you know, has some hiccups along the way as this team figures it out, I think everybody should still feel awfully good about the direction the program's going in. And last year, finishing on such a high note, one game away from Omaha, I certainly helps people get to that point.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Gamecock fans should be very excited. But, yeah, I was just going to say, going back to your point, South Carolina, what, they had 10 guys drafted from last year's team. I mean, you just don't see that on a lot of teams. I mean, it's crazy to think, you know, how much talent that team a year ago had. So, Derek, you know, we really appreciate you coming on. Come back on. Let's talk some baseball as the season approaches. But, obviously, you guys continue to do a fantastic job, and we'll continue to listen.
All right. Appreciate it. And certainly always encourage people, as far as tuning us in on our broadcasts, if it's not something that's easily accessible through a radio, even if it is, make sure you download the USC Game Day app. That is such a great tool to have. You can listen to any Gamecock broadcast on there for free. The stream's easy to get to. All games, all coaches' shows, you name it. And it allows you, no matter where in the world you are, to be able to listen to a broadcast and keep up with what's going on and get the Gamecock perspective, as opposed to having to hear what those guys on the national scene are trying to tell you about a team when you already sitting at home know more about them than they do.
Yeah, ditto for sure. I've abused the Gamecocks app many, many a times, especially during baseball season when we don't get a lot of those premier matchups on TV or anything. The Gamecocks sure. app, I can definitely attest, is the way to go. So for sure, go download that, tune in. But Derek, you want to let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter in case they want to give you their insight or –
Absolutely. That's a great point, because as much as we laugh about Twitter, I still probably spend more time on it than I should, and love it, because I'm a guy who always is tapped in I want knowledge. I want to see what people are saying and writing about other teams and my teams, especially the teams we're getting ready to play. So yeah, it's at the Sky Gamecocks, love to hear from folks. So by all means, send me a note and tell me your thoughts on either what we're doing on the air. If you love it, if you hate it, we're big boys. We can handle it. For that matter, if you think there's a good storyline that we're missing out on, by all means, we'd love for you to point that out, and we'll try and work it into the broadcast.
Absolutely. Well, again, Derek, you know, appreciate you taking the time, and obviously you guys do a fantastic job. So keep up the good work.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate that. He's Derek Scott for Thomas Floyd. I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in to another episode of the Spurs Up Show, and we will catch you guys next
time. Are you working?
Until then,
I'm working.